Being a professional isn't about the money you make, the position you hold, your level of expertise, or fame. It's the motivation and the attitude you bring to your work. A desire for always learning and improving, and balancing your creative output with getting the business done. Welcome and join the Creating Pros.
Hi, and welcome back to Creating Pros. I'm your host, Jim Nettles. This week, I want to dive a little bit into something that may seem a little bit off at first, but for a lot of us, it's been a big part of our culture, a big part of growing up, and even a big part of adulthood. But I don't think a lot of people know how big of an impact that what I want to dive into today really has had on the culture overall, on business, on intellectual property, on a lot of different spaces, and really has had a great deal of impact on shaping the world we're in today. And that's to talk about role-playing games. We're in the year, it's the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons since Gary Gygax and friends rolled out the first real major RPG back in the early 70s in 1974. But if we look at the history and the notion of what is an RPG, what is this kind of gaming, why is it important? Gaming like this goes back thousands of years in a lot of ways. It is a lot of things to a lot of people. I mean, when we look at the notion of the modern incarnation of tabletop RPGs, it caters to a lot of things. It caters to the mathematically inclined that love to go into the numbers, the statistics, playing the odds. It goes into the notions of how we build society, how we build characters, how we build relationships between people. But most importantly, one of the things I think that it does for a lot of people is to develop that ability to tell a story. And more importantly, it's not ability just to tell the story, but live in and be a part of the overall story. And story is one of the most fundamental aspects to being human. All of culture is based around the notion of story and shared experiences and going in and talking about, you know, what are we doing? How do we approach things? And if we look at RPGs, I don't think it is an understatement to talk about the impact that, and I'm going to start with that notion of the launch of D&D, even though it wasn't the first absolute RPG, but it really is the first modern RPG in terms of the rule sets, the numbers, the storytelling, and everything that we would perceive as being an RPG today. You know, D&D was not the first product from Gary and friends. They had released a couple of things before that. You know, their time goes back into the 60s. And a lot of what led up to creation of modern day RPGs came out of the 50s and 60s with war games, a lot of the basic mathematical and development of new tabletop games and things. But again, the tradition of storytelling and acting it out and playing through scenarios, wargaming, goes back millennia. You know, the idea of wargaming and talking through and playing out scenarios is as old as planning for war itself. And so if we look at how Dungeons and Dragons went and brought forward notions of building very structured rules about how not only combat would work, but all of the elements of storytelling would work within their universe, within their world. That was really kind of a big fundamental leap forward because they built an entire universe, an entire world, rule sets, tools. They built the world you could step into and play in, and then turned you loose. You actually, as a player, as the dungeon master, as the person running the game, had a lot of latitude into how and what you took on. It gave you the opportunity to do everything from buy pre-built modules, buy pre-built stories, buy pre-built worlds, up to build entirely your own, create your own. It was really a step into creativity. And the reason I say that this has had a great fundamental impact on, I think, a lot of people in a lot of ways that they don't necessarily know and haven't perceived, is not only about how these kinds of tabletop games work, but the impact that it has had on technology, the impact that it has had on society, the impact it's had on people in general. So looking at it, first of all, let's talk about the technology and the technological aspects of it. One of the first computer games that ever really was out there was a very basic single-player RPG that let you go through a dungeon. You know, it was purely text-based. I remember being a kid, and it was one of those things that was built into the particular computer system and platform because it was one of those things meant to help teach people how to use the computer systems, the technology, all of this sort of stuff. And so you got to go through and play through this dungeon. You got to go fight monsters and pick up items and do all kinds of fun stuff. And it was purely text-based. And that being one of the first tools that was there to help introduce people to the technology was really kind of a fascinating idea. And if we look at over since the mid-70s when that was created, up to especially into the 80s, because this would have been in the early 80s when I was on this, on that particular system and playing around with this. But there were some really rudimentary sort of games built like that on some of the systems that were used to help build and test and play with things. But looking at that point in the mid 80s, where you had this online game, you could go play with it, it was on the server. Well, look forward as to where we've come today. How much of the gaming industry in terms of computer gaming is in some way, shape, or form built around the notion of role-playing games? And in fact, we've seen a lot of properties like Lord of the Rings, a lot of fantasy worlds. We've seen those turned into RPG games, but the same thing with, larger properties, Star Wars, Star Trek. But we also have seen a lot of other properties that have become created that have stretched beyond the gaming world into other medium, books, films, things like The Witcher. So we see now that RPG games offer a position for people to come in and play and create their own stories and tell their own stories and their own lives in some of these favorite universes of fans. But this is even more important than just that notion of gaming and society and creativity and MMORPGs and things that cross everywhere from tabletop games that you're playing with friends around the table to online technologies that enable those same groups of friends to things that are playing online games so that you never get to meet those other people. Well, there's a long-running joke that the internet would not exist if it were not for adult content. And there is probably way more truth to that than most people want to know, that a lot of the reason that pushed forward for processing power and bandwidth was for access to adult content. But there was also a major driver behind that, which was also for this notion of entertainment, of gaming, of connection, and building a better and better experience. And these are things that the business world has profited from greatly because, again, a lot of this processing power in these things would not have come about, and we would not have PCs and desktops and the internet today the exact same way without some of these kind of critical drivers where the people that were designing, building, and implementing these kinds of technologies were often gamers. These are people that the idea of the math, of the experience, of the numbers, of the rule systems. It was those aspects that attracted a lot of people in the technology world to come in and play with these things because it gave you a different way of looking at things, of thinking through things, but seeing also the impact of randomness into the world. Also, the other aspect there, again, of storytelling. This is a way of taking people and helping unite them. I mean, I can tell you right now, I've worked in companies where you're sitting there up late at night watching an implementation run, working things through, whatever number of things. I can tell you large organizations I've worked with where there are groups of people, often in the technology spaces, that play these tabletop games, that will go in and play the online games, that have great communities built around them. And what we've seen over, especially about the last 20 years, is that this has gone from what would have been in my day, when I was in middle school and high school, and largely we were the ones that were playing these games back in those days. This is now something that crosses age barriers. We see RPGs being used in mental health care and mental health systems. Daniel Hand, that I've done a lot of shows with over the years out of the UK, Monomyth Counseling. They actually use tabletops and RPGs as a part of their mental health practice. We see RPGs being used today in other forms of mental health and mental wellness. We see them being used sometimes in adult care centers with people with mental difficulties, Alzheimer's, things like this, where basic kinds of tabletop games excite and allow people to engage in a lot of different ways. We see these things being used in communities, everything from kids up to seniors, senior adults, because it creates that community and the storytelling, and because you can make it as complex and structured or as loose as you want to. So the notion that how much we've created and derived to be able to support these kinds of games in the online world really has had a really significant impact on computer technology, desktop systems, and this has driven a lot of the need for the gaming industry to want to create better processing, better graphics, is to have that a more immersive experience. But beyond this, I think we can also see just the greater cultural impact that things like this have had. We see, and I mean, if I go back to the 70s, we had a lot of films back in those days, 70s, 80s, sword and sorcery. Well, a lot of that was tied into the fandom around the notion of Dungeons and Dragons. But from a societal standpoint, this has also been one of those places where we've seen that Dungeons and Dragons and many of its other derivative type systems have had a big impact on society because, A, I can tell you a large number of the writers I know, a large number of the storytellers, the people in this space, all either were or currently are gamers. The notion of the stories you tell and the things that you can act out in these kinds of spaces, it's very impactful. It causes creative thinking, but you still get to play with that notion of randomness. And there's, the number of memes and the amount of fun that goes around with the notion of, did you get the hit or not? Or rolling that natural one and everybody gets to make fun of you because that's part of the fun of the storytelling is when things go wrong. Because if everything goes straight up right, that's boring. But because of the random nature of things, having a bad roll can mean you would miss the elephant standing in the middle of the room. Notions like this make the experience fun, but it also triggers a lot of critical thinking. It triggers a lot of that creative space that I believe is so fundamentally important to us as people. And it's so fundamentally important because it helps bond us together as people. And one of the things that I think I still find really curious is because I don't think a lot of people understand these platforms entirely for what they are. I mean, if we go back to the 1980s when I was a teenager, we saw a lot of the satanic panic about, everybody thought that these games were of the devil. Well, there's still a lot of people that probably think that. I know a few of them. I see stuff about this all the time, how this is a gateway drug into the devil. But they say the same thing of any kind of a game of chance, whether it's cards, dice, anything else along those lines. But again, there's the notion of getting the opportunity to be the hero or getting the opportunity to be the villain, getting to play out and express those feelings is often also seen as a dangerous perspective within culture. Because if you're getting to play out and play act and really enact certain things that we would never do, in our day-to-day lives. We would never want to live in that scenario, but getting to play through some of those things can be an incredible amount of fun. I've been playing in a online game as a part of Go Indie. We've been doing this thing monthly, and we're doing it with a lot of indie games and indie development. I tend to play a little bit more of a chaotic character. I know that's probably going to be a shock to everybody that knows me. But it's the fun of it, of how do you play that from the notion of I wonder what's out there. It's that if you play things from that notion of safety and security versus the notion of this is somewhere you can't get hurt and you can express absolute chaos or mayhem, or you can be that very caring person. We see groups and organizations like if you take a look at SCA, Society for Creative Anachronism, you know, LARPers, people that not only play the game, but act it out, live it out. We see a lot of people able to do these things, and it gives a degree of freedom of expression and freedom of creativity that I think is really valuable in the culture. And it gives a lot of people that openness. Now, one of the other spaces here that I think that a lot of people don't entirely understand because it gets really complex is how important D&D has been in terms of intellectual property, because they've built a tremendous amount of it. Now, everything they've built, again, like all IP, is somewhat derivative on all the things that have come before. But one of the things that has come out is that notion of what can you copyright and protect versus what can't you? D&D has come out and they've, of course, created these vast resources and they've created all these character guides, monster guides, world guides, different game modules, all of these sorts of things out there, which are protected. But one of the things that, to an extent, you can't entirely protect, yeah, are the algorithms, the rule sets that are actually used to play the game. And one of the things that Wizards of the Coast did, which is the parent company, was they made their rule sets out there under an open public license to allow people to come in and develop their own modules, their own stories, their own pieces that use that licensed material and make them available for sale. That's also allowed for the creation of a lot of other similar or spinoff type games, like Pathfinder was created and has built their own large universe with variations on the rule sets, but their own particular universe, their own particular storytelling. And both of these are series that have spun off a lot of books. We've seen larger companies manage to come out of startups like White Wolf and a lot of their products that are more horror based. We've seen a lot of things like Call of Cthulhu. We've seen space-based versions of them. But one of the fun things that we've seen is an explosion again in indie culture of people building and designing their own games, their own rule sets, variations on a theme. And this is all part of the business. This is all part of the growth and part of an entire industry that's been created out of the notion of play, out of this notion of storytelling. And this is one of those things I think that is really important to look at here in this 50th anniversary year of D&D, of how much a game has been able to contribute to the company, to the players, to the creators, and how much of an impact and how much that creating these kinds of fantasy worlds has done to create new intellectual property in terms of story, movies, film, TV, books, and games, online, role-playing, everything else. I firmly believe that had Dungeons & Dragons not been created, somebody else would have come up with something along these lines. We'd already seen precursors that were at least in some way, shape, or form built and based off of Lord of the Rings and other properties. But I think that there, even though somebody would have developed something in this space, I don't necessarily know that anybody would have had the expectation that this would have grown and become the kind of an empire that it has. And yes, there are certain people that, you know, look at Wizards of the Coast, TSR, these companies that hold the IP, and sometimes feel that they have ownership that they don't. And this is where intellectual property comes into play. This is part of the value of intellectual property, and this kind of an ownership is to what is yours and what belongs to somebody else, but they're enabling you and empowering you to use it and play with it and have it. So this is one of those things where I think it is really worthwhile just to look at sometimes how the smallest creative output can develop and build over time to become an empire of its own, that also has a great deal of impact on society, on culture, and really in a lot of ways has the capability to have a lot of unforeseen beneficial impact on things outside of that system itself. The things that it does to help people develop, people to become better human beings, for people to develop new skills, new ways of looking at the world, and most importantly, to create those real human bonds that are important to all of us. And this is the importance of any, or the importance of any creative business, is to create things that bring value to the world, both to ourselves as creators and to those people that appreciate and have the joy of experience the things that we've done. So until next week, this has been Creating Prose. Time to crack out that 20-sided die.